Sometimes one has to learn a parasha in Torah hundreds of times, if not more, until one can say that maybe now I'm beginning to understand it a little bit. I've had that experience, that feeling. I had this past week with Parashat Vayechi. And maybe the way in which to present it to you is, and you know, I occasionally like to come up with a title for this year. I would say that the title for this year is going to be A Tale of Two Psukim. And it's a tale of two psukim that we may very well not put them together, but the Chachmei HaMesorah, the wise men who wrote Torah, these two psukim are written in the Sefer Torah without any interruption. What I'm really talking about is the last pasuk in Parashat Vayigash and the first pasuk in Parashat Vayechi. The first pasuk in Parashat Vayechi, number 2, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. Vayechi Yimei Yaakov, the days of Yaakov, Shnei Chayov, the years of his life, was 7 years and 40 years and 100 years, 147 years. The Rashi immediately below there says, Vayechi Yaakov, Yaakov lived, Loma Parashat Zu Stuma. Why is Parashat Vayechi Stuma? Parashat Stuma means that there is no pause, there is no space in the Sefer Torah between the end of the parasha before and the beginning of this parasha. You will look in your Chumashim and you will see usually at the end of the Sedra there are three pays, three samachs, which indicate that there is a new paragraph that begins with the new parasha. Over here it's a run-on parasha together with Parasha Vayigash. Let's take a look at the last pasuk. Let's take a look at the last pasuk in Parashat Vayigash. And then after we take a look at it, and it's right there before, I made a pause between the two. But take a look at number one, the end of number one. Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Yisrael lived in the land of Egypt, Be'eretz Goshen, in the land of Goshen, Vayeor Zubah. And they took hold of the land. Vayifru, Vayiru B'miyod, they were fruitful and they multiplied. I just spent a few minutes thinking about this pasuk, and maybe you'll be able to help me. When I read this pasuk, I wrote the following. This is a pasuk that's pulsating with life. How do you like that? Energy. You feel vitality, vigor, growth, expansion. There's something festive and joyful about it all. What strength this pasuk demonstrates. Anybody want to add anything to the description? Blessings? I would accept that. Except my ultimate conclusion is going to be big curse. Big curse. Oh, you know where I'm going, all right? And now what about, how would you describe the first pasuk in Parashat Vayechi? End of an era. Termination. The curtain is coming down. A generation is passing. It's so somber. It's so sad. I think those are pretty good descriptions of that pasuk. Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, Yisrael Saba, Zaydi Yisrael, is about to pass from the scene. So here we have two psukim. There they are, both together. And if you take a look at the context of that pasuk at the end of Vayigash, what are all the psukim before telling? The psukim before are telling us of the economic disaster that has overtaken Egypt. They don't have food, they don't have what to eat, they're selling every last thing that they have to Yosef. Yosef is buying up the land, he's buying up the people. He is moving people from one part of Mitzrayim to the next. They are pleading with him and begging of Yosef that he should keep them alive. And there at Maftar already, after a long description of what's taking place, Hechi Tanu, you've kept us alive. Nimtzachem Beini Adonu, let us find favor in the eyes of my master. V'hayinu avadu l'paro, we will be slaves to Pharaoh. And at the same time that all of this is going on, of talking about a society in absolute upheaval, there in the land of Goshen, the Jewish people are taking hold of the land, building, there's tremendous prosperity, there is absolutely no problem of Parnassa. What growth, what development, what strength! I don't mind letting you in on where the Shir is going to take us. It's all an illusion. The pasuk that is pulsating with life has a cloud of death over it. How long will it last that Jews are going to be so prosperous in this country? How long? How long does it last? How long will it take until the masses over there are going to say that all of this prosperity, all of this growth, it's all come from us? The Jews robbed us blind. They Jewed us. So here is this pasuk that seems to talk about, wow, what strength from this pasuk. It's an illusion. Maybe what's going to be more significant is the passing of Yaakov. The passing of Yaakov seems to be somber, we said, and sad. And what we're going to see is that in this passing of Yaakov, he bequeaths to Klal Yisrael eternal life. Yaakov Avinu, brilliant, brilliant in the way he's going to plant the seeds, lay the foundations of a Klal Yisrael that 4,000 years later we will say, Od Avinu Chai, Am Yisrael Chai, and he does it. All alone, brilliantly. So that really, I think the parsha was given the correct name, Vayechi Yaakov. The end is going to be Yaakov will live. Paro? We don't even know who this Paro was. We may never know. Historians have all sorts of theories, who this Paro was, who the next Paro was. At the beginning of next week's Seder in Shemot, it's going to say, Vayakom Melech Chodesh Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. A new king arises who doesn't know Yosef, and the Jewish people are enslaved. There's historical evidence that what took place is, and this is the kind of thing that you have to always take into consideration. The Yosef lived and functioned at the time of the 18th dynasty. It's intellectual, there's 18th, I don't know who figured out 18 dynasties. But then comes the 19th dynasty. The 19th dynasty is the one that really destroys the one before. A new power is going to take over in Mitzrayim. Anybody who's been identified with the previous government is in serious, serious trouble. I have this feeling that when Rashi says, Vayechi Yaakov Loma Parsha Zu Stuma, why is this parsha closed and shut? L'fki shekivon shenifter Yaakov Avinu nistimu eneyam v'libam shel Yisroel mitzaras ha-shibud she'ebchilu l'shabam. With the death of Yaakov begins the enslavement of the Jewish people. And the second pshat Rashi says, Shebigesh v'galotet ha-keitz l'bonav v'nistamim, and he wanted to tell them what the end was going to be. And I have a feeling that the case that he's talking about, not when Mashiach is going to come. I tell you, as I think about it right now, what do you mean he's going to tell them? Fellas, there's great hope. I have it on good I have it on good authority that in about 4,500 years there's going to be a Mashiach. And a cry of joy goes up from the 12 children of Yaakov. That's the good news. 4,500 years down the line, or maybe a few years here, is going to be, is that what Yaakov wants to tell them? Is it possible that Yaakov wants to tell them that there's going to be an end to this great prosperity that you're living through? Didn't Rabbi Adler talk, quote the Rav at the end of the Shir? He quoted the Rav, V'hoser Satan me'achareinu, the Satan from behind. There's a Satan in front and a Satan in back. The Satan in front of you, is that what you see? The problem, the tzara that you see, you can deal with. But then there's the tzara behind that lurks in the background that you don't know about it. And therefore you don't know how to protect yourself or prepare yourself for it. It's going to come one bright day. It's just going to come crashing down upon you. It may very well be that Rashi is saying that Yaakov wanted to tell them when the end of their great prosperity in Mitzrayim is going to come, so that they should be able to prepare themselves for it. The Nisani Manu, you can't tell it. But does that mean that Yaakov is now going to leave them to their own devices? Is he going to leave his children without any guidance for the future? What's going to happen to Klal Yisrael now? So I want to take you through the Seder and in a number of places show you the brilliance of Yaakov Avinu. He knows precisely what to say and to whom. And he is therefore going to lay the foundations upon which Klal Yisrael will survive throughout history. ויחי יעקב בארץ מצרים 17 שנה ויהי ימי יעקב שני חיל 7 שנים וארבעים ומעט שנה ויקרבו ימי ישראל למות. The days of Yisrael to die came close. ויקרא לו בנו ליוסף, he called his son Yosef. ויאמר לו, and he says to Yosef the following. We're going to see what he says to Yosef. We're going to see what he says to Yosef in the presence of Yosef's children, Manasseh and Ephraim. We're going to see what Yaakov says to all of his children together. And from each one of these statements of Yaakov, we're going to watch how he builds up the strength and the vitality of Klal Yisrael that's going to become Am HaNetzach, an eternal people. What does he say to Yosef? In Nomatsasi came by Nechav, I found favor in your eyes, Sin the Yot Chatachas Yerechi, put my hand, your hand under my loin, Vasisa Noidin Chesed, do with me kindness, the MS and truth, Al not Tigberein bi Mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Mitzrayim. The Shachafti and Mavotai, when I will lie with my fathers, Unasatani mi Mitzrayim, he shall carry me from Mitzrayim, Ukvartani bi Kvartam, and bury me in their burial place. And he said, Anochi Asekid Varecha, I will do what you tell me to do. Vayomer, he said, Yishavali, swear to me, Vayishavalo, and he swore to him, Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Hamita, and Yisrael bowed the head of the bed. By the way, here incidentally comes a fulfillment of that dream, of the dream that Yosef had had all those years back. His father now bows down to him. But I want to point out a number of things about what he says to his son Yosef, and you're going to see how radically different it is than what he says to his children as a whole. He's going to say different things to different people because he wants to accomplish different things. Is that who I think it is back there? Your annual, semi-annual, tri-annual? Okay, Nathan Lewin. Okay, good to see you. All right. If I would have known, I would have prepared a drash for you, and you understand. I would have prepared. Okay. Maybe something will come to me.
he doesn't tell Yosef where. Where should you bury him?
He just takes care of it.
Ukvartani b'turatam. Bury me in their burial place. No more than that. There is something he says twice to Yosef that he's not going to say to the brothers. He begins by saying, "Al notik b'reini b'mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Egypt. Don't bury me in Egypt. Unesotani m'mitzrayim, carry me out of here." One thing Yaakov makes absolutely certain when he speaks to Yosef, that Yosef can understand, what is more significant to him than anything else as far as Yosef is concerned is, get me out of here. I don't want to be buried in the Mitzrayim. That seems to be the essence of what he's telling, Yosef. That to him is more significant than anything else. And obviously the reason why that's more significant to him than anything else is because in talking to Yosef, and why does he speak to Yosef? As Rashi points out, because he's the one who will have the ability and the opportunity and all that's necessary in order to do it. To take him out of Mitzrayim, he's going to need Yosef. And with Yosef, Yaakov is afraid. Parents are always worried. We come by it very honestly, you understand? We have it in our genes. The only thing is, of course, when Yaakov is worried, Yaakov does something about it. He's not concerned that Yosef is going to forget Eretz Yisrael. Because Yosef, of course, is the one who is considered the great Ohev Eretz Yisrael. He is the one who says, "Gunav, gunav, tine'edev, if I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews." How does he appear before the prisoners in jail? Anar Ivni. But there is something that Yaakov Avinu is concerned about. Yosef may have dual loyalties. Yosef is the greatest success in Chutz Laaretz in history. The greatest success. Don't tell me Kissinger and don't tell me anybody else. I'm talking about a success. We're talking about a success story. It's not somebody who used to deliver the New York Times or shine shoes. We're talking about a slave out of prison who rises to the pinnacle of power. Mitzrayim has been very, very good to Yosef. Nobody in Chutz Laaretz ever made it the way he did. Nobody ever made it there. He wasn't driving a cab in Mitzrayim. He made it. He made it big. You know, so there's always the idea of Hakar Sapov. You have to have a sense of gratitude and thankfulness. He made everybody see that he has two lands. I have Mitzrayim and I have Eretz Canaan. And he loves Eretz Canaan. There's no question about it. He'll come a few times a year and go to the Kotel and maybe meet with a number of members of the cabinet. I mean, listen, Mitzrayim has been very, very good. What Yaakov is concerned that Yosef may very well have a degree of loyalty to Mitzrayim. What Yaakov Avinu wants is that Yosef should know that Yaakov, his father, despises Mitzrayim. Al notik b'reini b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. When I die, take me from here. Unesatani m'mitzrayim. Carry me from Mitzrayim. Yosef, he's going to make Yosef swear, because only by virtue of an oath will Yosef, he feels, be able to stand up against anybody who may very well want to stop him from doing what his father wants him to do. Let's shift for a moment and see what is it that Yaakov says to the rest of his children. He's going to gather them together, he's going to give them the brachos, he's going to bless them, and we're going to see what the essential nature of those brachos are. And then right on the other side, number 6, Kol Eile Shifte Yisrael, Shnei Masa. All of these, this is the end of the brachos, all of these are the tribes of Israel, 12 of them. This is what their father said to them. He blessed them. He blessed each one according to his blessing. We will see that each one, Yaakov Avinu says about them that each one has unique talents and special strengths, and that he blesses them that they should be able to realize the full potential of their blessing. And he commanded them, and he said to them, I'm going to be gathered to my nation. Kivru oti el avotai. He opens up not by saying, Al no tigbereini b'mitzrayim, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. No, he begins in a completely different way. Here he wants to stress to them, first of all, Kivru, bury me el avotai. I want to be buried with my fathers. El hamo'ara, in the cave asher b'shnei Ephron Achiti, that is in the field of Ephron Achiti, and watch. I can't help it, but he's going to talk like a lawyer right now. He's going to tell them, you know, the party of the first part of the race bought it from the party of the second part, and he's going to tell precisely how it was purchased and where it is, so you should know exactly where to bury it. B'ma'ara asher b'shter ha'machpelah, the cave that is in the double field, asher al p'nei mamre, be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. Asher kona Avram et hasada, Avram purchased the field from Ephron the Chiti la'achuzat kever, as an inheritance for a grave. Do you realize that in the words that Yaakov had said to Yosef at the beginning of the Seder, he never once mentioned Eretz Canaan? Didn't mention Eretz Canaan. Because Eretz Canaan at this point is not important to him. When he talks to Yosef, he just wants to get the most significant message for Yosef. Al no tibereini b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Carry me out of Mitzrayim. And when he talks to the brothers, there are two things he says. He says, number one, bury me with my fathers, and I want it to be in that ba'ada that is in Eretz Canaan. Shama kavu et Avram, that Sarah Yishtel, there they buried Avram and his wife Sarah. Shama kavu et Yitzchak, that Rivka Yishtel, there they buried Yitzchak and his wife Rivka. The Shama kavati et Leah, and there I buried Leah. Mikna asada, the purchase of the field. Bahama ora asher bo. We're talking about a man that in the next pasuk is going to die. You know, it sounds like this is some kind of a real estate agreement that he is reciting to them. But it's so terribly important, because this is some of the most important real estate in the world. This is the real estate that he is leaving over, the legacy that he's going to leave to his children. Shama kavati es leo, mikna hasada, the purchase of the field, v'hama ora shebron, the cave that's in it, me'ed b'nei chet, I purchased it legally from the sons of chet. Vayichal Yaakov l'tzavot, that one of Yaakov finished commanding his children, vayesof raglov el hamita, and he gathered his feet into the bed, vayigva, and he expired, vayeyosef el amav, and he was gathered to his people. By Avram, it says, vayigva, vayomot, and he died. By Yitzchak, it says, vayomot, vayigva. The only one of the others where it does not say, vayomot, that he died, is Yaakov, right here. Extremely significant. And it's most probably for that may be one of the reasons why the Gemara says Yaakov Avinu lo mate. Yaakov Avinu didn't die. What it means is, and that's how I understand it, that he is laying the foundations for the eternity of the Jewish people. To Yosef he has said, Mitzrayim, yet. I want nothing to do with Mitzrayim. To his sons, he says, Kivru oti al avotai, bury me with my fathers in the land of Canaan, in a place that I bought very square. I want to take a look at one more place now. We have to see all of them in order that we can have a complete picture. Number four, Yosef has now come to Yaakov with his two children, Menasseh and Ephraim. And he then comes that great passage, when I came from Padan, Meta alai Rachel be'eretz Canaan paderech. Rachel died in the land of Canaan. Now is the first time that he mentions Eretz Canaan to Yosef, and it's in the presence of Menashe and Ephraim. Ba'od kivrat eretz lavo Ephrata. That was just another piece of road to come to Ephrata. Ve'egbereh Hashem, and I buried her there be'derech Ephrat. He baked lechem. On the way to Ephrat, he baked lechem. Maybe a question that you never thought of. Is it possible that there's something that's going through Yosef's mind? Your beloved wife was Rachel. Why do you want to be buried in the Maarat HaMakpelah? Why don't you want to be buried in Bethlehem? Never thought of that? The Rashi, the famous Rashi over here, seems to indicate, and I think Rashi was troubled by that, therefore Rashi is saying that Yaakov is really telling Yosef two things. Number one, he wants to tell him, I know that you've held it against me all of these years. It's an amazing Rashi. If I go into that Rashi, I'll never get out of it. Then the shear is over. That's the end. But Rashi says that he really tells Yosef, after all of these years, I know that you've held it against me, that there was sort of something that made it that our relationship was never perfect. There was something missing. And I know that you held it against me that I buried your mother on the road. I didn't even take her to Bethlehem. I didn't even take her to Ephrat on the road. So I want you to know that the reason why I did it, so Rashi tells us, I did it because there's a day that they're going to go into exile, and when they go into exile, they're going to pass Kever Rachel, and Rachel is going to stand up before God, and she's going to pray on behalf of the Jewish people. So he's telling him why it was important for him to bury Rachel where she is buried. But there's one thing he doesn't seem that he's told him. Abba, she was your beloved. Why don't you want to be buried there? I think that Yaakov is giving the answer. There is something more significant than being buried with my beloved Rachel. And that is, our avotai are more significant at this juncture and for all of history than ahuvati, my beloved one. My fathers are more important. Because what I have to establish once and for all is the continuity and the eternity of the Jewish people. Pharaohs, well, you know what he's concerned about? Yaakov is also concerned, not only that he doesn't want to be in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, he would be a mummy in a museum. In the Maarat HaMakpelah, he is a living Yaakov Ad Hayom Hazeh. Nobody is certain who that paro or any paro was or where they were. Nobody has a clue. Nobody really cares except a few Egyptologists. But 4,000 years later, Bnei Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, are learning this parasha in Torah, and the reason for it is only because of the commands and what was said by Yaakov in this week's Sefer to his children. So he has told Yosef, he tells, Al Motik Bereini B'Mitzchayim, and only in passing he tells him, bury me with my fathers. To his children, he says, there he goes at great length about the fact that he purchased the land. You see, if by Yosef, what he's concerned about Yosef is that Yosef may feel loyalty to Mitzchayim, and therefore he has to balance that off with, I'll not take but anything in Mitzrayim, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. You know what he's concerned about the brothers of Yosef? They may not see themselves as Egyptians, but you know what? They may see themselves as something worse. They may see themselves as universal people. They may see themselves with no loyalty to any land whatsoever. You know? The world is my, what? My oyster? What are you talking about? Ich kim, ich fuhr, ich gai, I can live here, I can live there. I can go to India, I can schlep through China, I can do whatever I want. The world is my oyster. No loyalty. A man without a country. So, you know, a man without a country is tragic. But what happens if a man is one who, every country is his country? That's even worse. As we said before, the man without a country knows that he doesn't have a country. The man with every country being his country thinks he has a country, and he has nothing. So what the Chavrusha is concerned about as far as the children, the brothers of Yosef, is that they're going to feel that, well, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, this place, that place, not rooted any place. The Chav in one of his shiurim talks about people who spend a lot of time in hotels. He says, in our hotels, the living is bright. Everything is there at your fingertips. It's plush, it's luxurious. But it's a man without a home. How long can you take it in a hotel? Wie lang can? Yeah. They're not rooted. So to the brother, to them he says, oh, you have roots. You have a piece of land that was purchased. We purchased it fair and square. You have a place where there are fathers. He is creating the link of the three Doros, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's similar. Remember, last week we were talking about Yaakov Avinu on his way down to Mitzrayim. He stops in Beersheba. And what does he do in Beersheba? In Beersheba, he cuts down the cedar trees that Avraham Avinu had planted in Mitzrayim, in Beersheba, to take it down to Mitzrayim so that it should be a constant reminder. Someday you're leaving here and you're going to build a Mishkan. The cedar trees were their connection with eternity. Yaakov Avinu was telling them there's something called Kever Avos. Can Paro understand that? Well, Paro can't understand that. Second side. The big piece over there, the Psukim. But take a look where it's underlined. The nothing is underlined? Did I pull that again? You know, I'm so bad when it comes to putting these sheets together. In mine, I underlined it, so I assumed that it was in yours. All right, so all we have to do is Pasuk Hey. Oh, it's a Psuk in the, you know, their number. Pasuk Hey. Avihis b'yanim lemor. My father made me swear so saying, Hine anochi made, behold, I'm going to die. B'kivri asher koriti li be'eretz Kenan, in the grave that I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, shoma tik b'nei, again you should bury me. V'atamau el eno ve'eg b'nei et obi, v'ashuva, let me go up and I will bury my father and I will return. First of all, I want you to notice over here. He says something that Yaakov never said. He didn't say it to Yosef. He didn't say it to the brothers. In the grave that I dug for myself, there I want you to bury me. No mention of my fathers who are buried there. No mention of any bond over there except for the fact that he dug a grave for himself there. And Yosef is brilliant in saying this. Because Paro is not going to understand the whole idea of Kever Avos. Kever Avos, B'nei Chet never understood it. Paro will never understand it. Every pharaoh saw himself as something unique and had his own pyramid or his own burial place for himself. There was no connection between one and the other. The only thing he can understand is that a person of the importance of Yaakov had dug for himself, you know, it doesn't sound good in English, you know, he dug for himself a grave. I mean, it's now pretty bad. He had prepared for himself a burial plot. Okay. Even though the literal translation is Bakever Asher Koritili, the one that I dug. All right.
But that's a funny word for dead.
Funny words, you have to look into Rashi, you have to look in the Mepharshim, Karniti, there are those the words really. Why is it a funny word? I'm going to give this back to you. Why is it a funny? It says in Parchat Mishpatim, Ki Yiftach Ishbar, if a person is going to open a pit, O Ki Yichre Ishbar, or a person is going to dig a bar. So the word Kara in Torah is used for digging. The only thing is, the digging has to be on the stood, because Yosef can't be lying. So, what do you mean dig? He didn't dig it. They're going to dig it. They might have. But Rashi seems to tell us, therefore, that it means the word kaniti also means kaniti, that I acquired. Doesn't Rashi say that? If he doesn't, he should. Huh? Oh yeah, Rashi says kipshuto. The simple meaning is kimo ki yichre. I know it's pretty small. A man who will dig a umedrasho od mit yasheva la lochin kimo asher kaniti. Rabbi Akiva said, when I went to Krate Hayam by the sea, they would call mechida purchase kida. All right. Yosef can't talk about, you know, my fathers are buried there. It seems that this is an idea that is so natural to us that simply would not have been understood by them. But what he could understand is that, you know, a person of significance, as all of the pharaohs, most probably spent half their lifetime preparing the burial place for themselves. And you know, they furnished everything, and they had to make sure that there was enough food and enough money to keep them going through the years of mumminess. And he can understand Bakever Asher Koriti Li. He doesn't understand a connection with others. In sum, Yaakov has three fears. The three fears are, number one, he's afraid of Mitzrayim, and the fear of Mitzrayim is the fear that they will lose their connection to Eretz Yisrael. The second is he's afraid of assimilation. Take a look in this last part that we were learning. Pasuk Chet. All of the house of Yosef and his brothers and his father's house, they all go on the mission to bury Yaakov. I don't know how long they will be gone. Laktafam v'tzonam u'v'koram ozbu v'eretz Goshen. They were able to leave their wives, their children, and their possessions in the land of Goshen with absolutely no fear that anything will happen to them. Do you understand how secure they are in Mitzrayim? So I made it a little better. So I said, wives, who's going to take care of the top? Who's going to take care of the... She doesn't like that, huh? Do you understand the security in which they're living there? They're going to be gone for months, and they can leave their children and their wives and... And I shall complain that I say cattle after wives. No, their wives, their children, and their cattle. And they can leave it there. Because Vayeshev Yisrael, Beretz Goshen, Vayeozubah, Vayifru, Vayirbumon. This is precisely what Yaakov Avinu is afraid of. He's afraid of Mitzrayim. They're going to lose the bond with Eretz Yisrael. The second thing that he's afraid of, someday there's going to be the process of assimilation is going to begin, and that's going to tear away at the fabric of Jewish society. And third, what he's afraid of is that they're going to be cut off. They're going to be cut off from their connection with their fathers. What Yaakov Avinu wants to establish in this sedra is he must teach Yosef and his children Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. One. And it begins by telling Yosef, Al-Motig B'reini B'Mitzrayim, don't bury me in Egypt. It continues by him telling the sons of Yosef that their mama is buried there, that's Canaan. Never forget, yeah, their Sapta,
Their Sata is buried via Eretz Canaan. Because remember, he is deeply concerned about Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim, I believe Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that Ephraim, why did he call Ephraim? Ki Hithrani, God has made me fruitful, Beretz Ani, in the land of my affliction. Menashe is called Menashe Ki Nashami Elikim, because God has made me forget at Beit Avi, the house of my father. Can you imagine what those two names, Menashe and Ephraim, mean to Yaakov Aminu? It seems to be that there's a process of being cut off that has begun over here. And he has to stop it. Rabbi Yaakov said that Ephraim, he wanted to explain why was it that some years later, the first one who's going to break out of Egypt, 30 years before the Exodus, were the children of Ephraim. It's in Divrei Hayom, and it says that they made their way toward Plishtim, and they were decimated by the Philistines. It was an attempt to break out of Mitzrayim that failed, just didn't succeed. So he says, why was it Ephraim? Because Ephraim already had an Egyptian name. He said all serious Egyptian names have to have a pay and a resh. Potiphar, Potiphera, Paro, right? Ephraim is a good Egyptian name. So Ephraim is walking around Egypt thinking, I was born here. The truth is, he may very well have been born in that country while those who had invaded Mitzrayim were the greenhorns. And he was born there, and he's enslaved. And he thinks to himself, I'm more Egyptian than all of you Egyptians. Why am I being enslaved? And therefore they were incapable of taking the shibud, and they had to break out. So number one, again, Yaakov must first of all establish for them the idea of Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. And of course there's the famous Meshech Chachma. I'm certainly not going to go into that, we'll never get out of here. The Meshech Chachma in the Chukosai, that says that Yaakov made certain that under all circumstances he must be buried in Eretz Canaan, because he wanted to tell his children clearly they have no other home, and that they should always look forward, because you know, if he would have been buried in Mitzrayim, I tell you, there'd most probably be tours, Yehi Muntit and Donishtek, you understand, Glot Kosher Yaakov Avinu tours, and there would be a sense of connectedness to Mitzrayim. He didn't want that in the worst way. He wanted them to know that Tachlis and Mamas are in Eretz Yisrael, no other place. So Kedushat Eretz Yisrael is one. Kedushat Knesset Yisrael. And here I want to take a few minutes just to read with you something that comes from the writings of the Rav on the second side. It's in a sefer called Divrei Hashkacha. Vayikra Yaakov el Bona Vayomer. On the other side, Yaakov called his sons. This is the center of the parasha. Very center of the parasha. Yaakov calls his sons and he says, Hey, us will gather by Gidalachem, and I will tell you what's going to happen to you at the end of days. He called to the Shimu, gather together. Hadvarim ha'ela mamish domim, the Rav says, the words of Yaakov Avinu here are so similar to what Esther says to Mordechai in the Megillah. Leich Knosses, call Ayahudim, go gather all of the Jews together. Go gather them all together. Musag HaKnesset, and over here he means the gathering in of the Jewish people. B'shayachut L'am Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu Rishon Hayala Agdarav, the first one who established the idea of gathering together Klal Yisrael. This was Yaakov Avinu. Im Shalom Aman Milazum in the Purash, though he didn't say it clearly, but just the very act of to make the connection between that Knesset Israel and Eretz Israel. What does he accomplish by bringing them together? He brings them together and he also blesses them. And in the blessing, he points out the unique qualities of each and every one. How different they are from one another. Or look at it another way, how unique and individualistic they are, and that the the talents and the abilities that they have may very often even be in contradiction and in contrast to one another. But that's the beauty of Klal Yisrael. God never wanted us all to be clones. He didn't want us all to be of one sort. The harmonious blending of all of these differences, that makes up the beautiful tapestry that's Klal Yisrael. Nobody has the one single way to God. There can be chassidim, and there can be mishpachtim, and there can be litaim, and there can even be dati la'umi. How do you like that? This is the beautiful tapestry that makes up Klal Yisrael. Take a look how he says it. Bibrachos kulam both with day between Hashoni Fahayichud Shahu bin Yaakov. In all the brachos, what comes to expression is the difference and the uniqueness of the children of Yaakov and of the house of Yaakov. Kol Yachid uprat mibne Yaakov, each individual and single member of the house of Yaakov, who Yachid umyuchid bi ishiuto, each one is very special. His personality is special. He's not just a clone. He's not part of a herd. And there are times that there are differences. Yeah, we talked the Parshas Chai Yisrael. We talked about the nonsense of trying to make a zivug by finding the two of them are peas in a pod. They're just perfectly matched to each other. Perfectly matched. She likes Hapoel Tel Aviv, and he likes Hapoel Tel Aviv. He likes Beethoven and she likes Beethoven. So if you get all of these put together, you got a terrific zero. Maybe it would be better if she was a chveis, a Maccabi Haifa. Because the end is going to be that there are differences. And they are going to clash. And the beauty of it all is going to be when they finally come together. There's no such thing. Two people are not alike. We talked about it. He wants the heat on and she wants the heat off. I can only talk from my experience. What else am I supposed to do? Bear my whole life before you? She doesn't like the heat on. He says the beauty of Klal Yisrael is in the fact that they may very well often be in conflict. But as Vahim Vesufa, at the end, as Chazal say, there will be the love that comes from. The growth and the vitality of Klal Yisrael is in all of these various talents that come together. In a Doma Demutu Yukno Shal Ruvain, the Demutu Yukno Shal Yehuda, there's no way to compare what Ruvain is to that which Yehuda is. The Chen Gamei Tzul Shara Shvotim, and so too by all the other tribes. HaYahadut Kolele Kama Vakama HaFachim. Yahadut contains within itself all sorts of opposites. Hamuchunasim la'achdut that are gathered together as one bidmuta, and they form Knesset Yisrael. Knesset Yisrael. Shebo magim la'achada u'laharmonia kol ha'ichyot ha'yichudiyot shel b'nei Yaakov. In that Knesset Yisrael, there comes a union, a harmonious union of all of the qualities and the uniqueness of b'nei Yaakov, Beit Yaakov. Shalopam in Ugadim Lechora. Hatotzah, so Fitchel Atalit, the end of this process is Kedvar of Shalom Ramban. There is a Ramban that says that Avram was blessed, Bakol, Mikol, Kol. It means that he contains everything within him, and all of that which he contains all comes together in a harmonious blending. Let's go a few lines further. Zeh ma she'omer Rashi al haposuk kol eile shiftei Yisrael. In this sentence it says all of these are the tribes of Israel. After he gives them the bracha matam adloma, what does it mean? Berach al tam, he blessed them all. Lefi shenatam leYehuda, Rashi says since he gave Yehuda gvurat ari, the strength of a lion, and binyamin chatifato shel ze'ev, it should be. He can grab like a wolf, or an aftali kalut shalayala, the light-footedness of the deer. Yaakov shalom kolulam kulam bechol ha-brachas. Do you think that Yaakov didn't give something of all the brachas to all of them? Talmud lama beirach otam, he blessed them. Kan mudgash hayisrael. Here is the fundamental principle. Kol ha'brachot nitnu lekulam. All of the blessings were given to all. V'notzra ha'achudut ha'harmonit shel Knesset Yisrael. Ha'achudut ha'murkevet mikol tochot ha'nefesh ha'shonim shel Shishtei Beit Yaakov. The unity that is a result of all of the powers and all of the strengths of all of the children, all of the children of Yaakov. So number one, again, Yaakov Avinu has established over here Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. Number two, he has established Kedushat Knesset Yisrael, that there is a concept called harmonious blending of all of the various forces and opinions and talents that make up Klal Yisrael. The third that he wants to establish in this sefer is Kedushat Avotehem Shel Yisrael, the sanctity of the Tatas and the Lamas. Because only by virtue of that kind of a bond, that kind of a kesher with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, only that way will they remain forever unified with the Jewish people. The moment the Jew cuts himself off historically, you cut yourself off historically, you're finished. It comes to mind now, it is Asar B'Tavis. It is Asar B'Tavis. The Medrash, I've told you the Medrash in the past, and maybe here is what I'm thinking of right now is another for the powerful meaning that you may find in this Medrash. The Medrash says that when the Churban was about to take place, God complained bitterly to Yirmiyahu, "Where are my beloved ones? Where are my Kohanim? Where are my Levim? Where are those who know how to cry?" God makes the following statement to Yirmiyahu. He says to Yirmiyahu, "I feel now, the day of the Churban, I feel like a father who's bringing his one and only son to the chuppah, and the son dies at the chuppah." No worse tragedy than that. So who's going to cry? So he tells Yirmiyahu, go run to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Wake up Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Shehem Yodim Livkot, they know how to cry. So Yirmiyahu goes to Hebron, to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and he wakes up Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and he tells them, wake up, Achshav Atem Nidbakshim, you are now being called before Melech Malchei Amlocha HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you. So Avram turns to Yirmiyahu and he says, "Yirmiyahu, why are we being summoned before God?" So Yirmiyahu says, "I don't know." He didn't say the truth. And the Medrash says, and why didn't he say the truth? So Medrash says, because Yirmiyahu was afraid if he would tell them that the Churban is about to take place, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would have turned to him and said to him, "Biyamecha haita libanenu zot, this happened to our children in your days? This is what you call taking care of our children?" The Medrash is saying, and I think the time I told it to you is before Binyamin Netanyahu went to why? It was right after Sukkot, and there was a meeting in the Sukkah of Rabbi Avram Shapiro, and he invited me to the meeting. So I told the Prime Minister this Medrash. And I told him that when you go to why, don't think that the judgment of history is going to be in the next generation or two, three generations down the line. It doesn't mean that the judgment of history is going to be when your two children, Yair and Avner, I was pretty happy that I remembered the names, that you know, close friends can remember the names of their children. Okay, that was a little name dropping. So I told him that the judgment is not going to be when Yair and Avner are going to ask you, "And what did you do at why?" You should know the judgment of history is upon us every moment of the day. Now, because we're being judged not by the generations that will come, we are being judged by those who came before us. 4,000 years of Klal Yisrael are judging us, and now what are you? What are you doing? What are you doing? What they're saying to us is, whether you like it or not, there is a kesher to the others, there's a bond to the others. And you are now responsible. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov want to know, what are we doing to preserve the integrity and the unity of Yerushalayim? That's what we have to think about on an Asar HaBetetz. That's really what Yaakov is doing in this whole passage. He's establishing this bond so that you should know that every generation of Jews, you are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. This is the third pillar that he establishes over here. That there's an uninterrupted bond with the others, and the judgment of history is therefore upon you every moment of the day. You don't have any time. You don't have any time. It's not a matter of waiting what your grandchildren will say to you and Saba, what did you do when Yerushalayim was in grave danger? That's not it. V'yomecha hoysol v'boneinu zos. Avraham says to Yirmiyahu, is afraid that Avraham will say to him, V'yomecha hoysol v'boneinu zos. This happened. Does he succeed? Does Yaakov succeed in everything that he wants to accomplish in this Seder? Why does he succeed? First of all, the proof is that we're sitting here learning. We're learning Torah 4,000 years later. And we're learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Wait a minute. Is it so I am to the bargain? In the Israel Center. Okay? But the proof is right there in Torah. Vayomer Yosef, the end of the Seder, the end of from Master. I'm just going to read the Pesukim from Master to the end. I mean, this is one of those Seders that just the Pesukim, you just have to see them in their context. Vayar Yosef Ephraim b'nei Shilashim. Yosef saw to Ephraim a third generation. Gam b'nei Machir ben Menashe Yuldo al Birke Yosef. That means great grandchildren, the sons of Machir. The son of Menashe were born on the lap of Yosef. So we already see what's taking place over here. There's the bond of the generations, and the bond of the generations is not three. It is already extended to four. You hear that from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? You have seven generations. Vayomer Yosef Elach of Yosef said to his brothers, Anochi Meit, I'm going to die. Ve'elokim pakor yifkodokem, God is going to remember you. Ve'elah tem en haaretz hazot, and he's going to take you out of this land. El Ha'aretz Hashem Nishba, Lavram, Liyitzchak, Uliyakov. Now you have to understand there's something unique over here. This is the one place, really, in all of Tanakh, where a son calls his father by name. We don't call our parents by their names. And if you think that you heard the same thing over here when Yaakov had said to his sons, and we learned of Sukkim, there they buried Avraham and Sarah his wife, there they buried Yitzchak and Rivka his wife, and there I buried Leah. So it seems that Yaakov is talking about Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky also says in a number of pieces, he says, as long as the idea of Avos is said at the beginning of the conversation. He says at the beginning, I want you to bury me with Avosai. You can say in the Gemaras where a person would call his Abba Yaakov. If you say the name, the word Abba, then you can say the name afterwards. The only place in all of Tanakh where you have a son calling a father by name without the word Avos over here. Yosef says to his brothers, I'm going to die and God is going to remember you and he's going to take you out of this land to the land that he swore to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why is Yosef able to call his father Yaakov by name? Because what has happened over here is, after all that Yaakov taught them in this Seder, he has now created the collective, the others of all of Klal Yisrael. Ein kodin, the Gemara says, Ein kodin avos el eshtoshi, you can only call three avos. In the term Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that already means avos. It becomes already not like he is my personal father and therefore I cannot call him by name. Avraham, Yitzchak, this is the first time that you hear Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov together. The first time. Because what he's establishing over here is the concept of avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So what has happened over here? Number one, in this one pasuk we see that Yosef has learned to reject Mitzrayim. Yosef has learned the place is Eretz Yisrael. Ha'alitim et hatzmotayim zeh etchem. Take me up, and you Knesset Yisrael,
other ones, because you're going to go out. There's a Knesset Yisrael that's going to go out of Mitzrayim. And he also, the third principle he enunciates and makes it the Nusach of Klal Yisrael to all time. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Simple. The pasuk at the end of Parashat Vayigash that sounded so full of life and so pulsating, I don't know why I like that word, so full of life. They came, they lived in the land of Goshen, has the seeds of death in it. And the pasuk of Vayichi Yaakov, and that Yaakov was going to live, and Yaakov lived 17 years and he dies at 147, that pasuk is full of life. Vayichi Yaakov. Oda v'yimchai, Tzom Kalavirah.
Have I gone?